instead of making music to satisfy other people's happiness, I'm making music that satisfies myself. And if you listen to a song of mine and it touches you in some kind of way, there's some unspoken bond that we already have, because there's so much love and earnestness that comes behind the creation of all these songs.
Welcome to the Gift of Failure podcast, the show that asks one simple question: what has failure taught you, and what can you do with that failure to learn? Join me as I sit down with global icons, leaders from all walks of life, to explore how they have used their experiences to evolve into greatness. Let's dive in. I'm super excited today to have Toki Monsta on here today, Grammy nominated, unbelievable human being, done records with Anderson .Paak, you name it. This girl is on the rise, and there's just no way around it. Has overcome some unbelievable obstacles and still keeps winning. And that's just my kind of person. Toki, thanks for being on today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I mean, it's always a really interesting experience being on these types of things. I never hear myself talk a lot, so.
that's funny, you know. So look, the premise here that we talk about a lot is, you know, this failure, success, like things that go wrong, how they turn into something that goes right. My book that comes out in July is called The Gift of Failure. And so I know that you've gone through a lot of stuff to reach the place that you have. And what does failure mean to you versus success? Like, what is that? Does that even cross your mind? Do you think of that? Like, what do those words mean to Toki?
You know, it's interesting. I think that, and I'm sure we'll get into this later, my idea of failure has really changed a lot over the past decade. And I think failure before was, you know, the standard textbook failure. Like, I didn't make it. I'm like, this is bad. Like, I didn't achieve what I wanted to achieve. But now I don't really believe in failures. Or failure as a concept. I mean, obviously things can physically fail. Like my computer can fail over on this call, for example, but, you know, it's this kind of, I know it sounds cliche, but, you know, a lot of times when things haven't worked out, which I would have considered a failure, they end up giving me more, like, much better opportunities later on. So any kind of failure type lost opportunity moment always ends up being something that's more of a gift, if that doesn't sound too corny. You know?
No, that's not, it's beautiful. And I mean, I say this to people all the time, cliches are cliches for a reason, right? There's you know, that golden thread of, you know, of truth that comes. And I'm inclined to believe with it, to agree with you. You know, one thing that was jolting to me when I was, you know, learning more about you, was, would you be willing to talk a little bit about the Moyamoya disease and overcoming some of those things? Because that's enough to send 99.9% of people gone, like, forget about careers. And you overcame it and have prospered and are growing. And I think that's just so inspirational to tons of people. Would you mind sharing a little bit about how that happened? And
yeah, of course. You know, I'll preface this by saying, you know, this is a really traumatic sort of experience that I went through, but I always keep in mind that it's never as traumatic as some people, and definitely more traumatic than others. And when I started sharing this particular story that I'm going to share with you guys, I wanted to make sure that it was important, it was important to me to make sure that I wasn't trying to leverage something difficult that I went through in a way that seemed like I was using it as a gimmick. You know, for me, the reason why I decided to share the story, which is the reason why I'm sharing it now, is because there aren't a lot of positive stories, and there's not a lot of good stories out there. So all being said, in 2015, I was diagnosed with an incurable cerebral vascular disease called Moyamoya. And Moyamoya is an illness where the arteries that supply the left and right side of your brain start to close until they shut. And it's not because of standard stroke reasons like plaque or whatever. It's just a thickening of your arteries until they just close off, and then you get an aneurysm, stroke. Previously was not expected to live past the age of 40. Through the miracle of science, you know, I can have a very long, prosperous life ahead of me. And at the end of 2015, I noticed I was on tour with Anderson .Paak. At that time, he was on tour with me. Times have changed.
But, there you go.
We were on tour and we had one break in LA and I was like, oh, I'm going to go home, you know, change out my suitcase. I live in LA.
Were you not feeling good at that point? Like, did you feel something was off in any way at that moment? Or well, is it intuitively?
So it's a very, very like ticking time bomb sort of illness. You don't really know you have it until something bad happens. And fortunately for me, I caught kind of a lighter symptom. So when I was in LA going to change all my things, I noticed I suddenly couldn't feel my foot. I was walking and it felt like I had a ghost foot, had tripped. And that was extremely unusual. Why would I have that? I've had ongoing migraines and things like that. So I just knew this was not good. Why would that happen? So I went to my doctor. I let her know that this incident had happened. You know, there's prior histories of me going to see neurologists for my migraines. So she recommended scans. The scans show that I had very, very advanced moyamoya. I probably only had about like 90% blood flow through one artery and even less in the other. And the reason why I wasn't dead is because this illness causes your brain to use kind of peripheral arteries and smaller veins to overcompensate for your arteries. So if you want to compare it to freeways, if you're on a major highway and it gets shut down, what do? You get off and you take the side road, right? But those side roads are not meant to take as much traffic as a highway. So what ends up happening is those little side roads in your brain, those little peripheral arteries, they just burst because a lot of blood goes through your arteries and it's very robust and those other ones are not. So for me, I was alive and I couldn't tell because my body was working so hard to keep me alive by using these other channels. But at any point, it was just, I would have been gone. So I went to see a specialist in Stanford. They did an angiogram, which is a very in-depth scan of your arteries and your brain. They told me I had no time to wait. So it was advanced on both sides of my brain. And so I had to have two brain surgeries. So that incident at home with my ghost foot was in November. I got diagnosed in December of 2015. And then January of 2016, I had two brain surgeries a week apart from each other. I just had no opportunity to wait. So yeah.
How'd that affect your like cognitive? I mean, you're an artist, you're a DJ, you're making like, I gotta believe that has to have some effect on cognitive abilities, right?
Yeah, I mean, weirdly, not too much. The only thing that I noticed cognitively was that, it wasn't a thinking thing. It was more just I would get blurred vision because it's less brain and more arteries, right? So it's like the blood flow. So more like stroke symptoms or stroke-like things. And people that probably are at risk for that would probably be really familiar. But lots of headaches, lots of migraines. And I mean, I guess aside from the very physical and scientific component of all of this, it's really the mental hurdle that it created once I was diagnosed because, you know, I'm not very old and this was when I was even younger than now. There is no point at which you ever have to face your reality in such a harsh way. You know, you're like invincible, you know, out there doing your thing, hustling, partying, enjoying your friends, you know, not married yet, all these things that are great, right? About life. And I suddenly had to write a will. I had to tell my family, which is small. I had to decide, you know, who's going to take my cat if I were not to make it. Fuck. And because these surgeries come with high risk, you know, they're tinkering up in this zone and you never know, you know, even for me, I will say the surgery was very successful. Obviously, I'm here, I'm talking, I'm great, I'm not cross-eyed.
You're crushing it.
Yeah, thank you. But the surgery came with difficulty. So even though before the surgery, I was seemingly okay, I came across a lot of difficulties because of the surgery itself. And even though the surgery was successful, I woke up unable to talk. So I had acute aphasia. I was completely unable to communicate. My sister had taken time away from work and her family to come and take care of me. And I just woke up one day and I couldn't say anything to her. And on top of that, I didn't have any idea what she was saying. It felt like, do you remember like Charlie Brown, all the adults, it kind of sound like
weird
trombones and trumpets. It was kind of like, wah, I had no idea.
And now your memory of that, so you remember those moments now of just being gibberish to gibberish, basically?
Yeah, it's funny because when it was closer to that moment, I can remember what it felt like and what it sounded like. But now it's kind of like I'm recalling a memory of a memory, you know?
Got it.
So it's so unreal that I don't know how to really explain it to people. And other people who have had traumatic brain injuries, they kind of, we have like an unspoken understanding of how weird it happens when your brain circuits get all messed up. And it was as simple as, they would do a neurological test on me after the surgery. One that they would do that would kill me, that I thought was so annoying, is they would ask me to take my right thumb and put it to my left ear. Mind you, I'm not a potato. I'm like completely cognizant. I just cannot communicate and certain things were not working.
Oh man.
And so I couldn't really speak. And then I couldn't communicate, but I can understand that I couldn't hear people and I still had things I wanted to say, but I didn't know how. Felt like being in a foreign country. So when the doctors, there was a point where I was able to understand a little bit better. It would improve slowly, but the doctors would ask me, put your right thumb to your left ear. And I would just be so frustrated because I had no idea how to do it. I would just look at myself going like, I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to put my right thumb to my left ear. It became such a difficult thing. And all the neurological tests, they were so annoying because I was like, I just don't know how to do this. Because I was still frustrated. And I still wanted to make sure that I got the test right.
So how do you, like, this is like, it's stranger than fiction. Like, how does one, so I've had this conversation a couple of times about, people say it's, not my fault. I'm like, yeah, it's not your fault, but it's your fucking problem.
Yeah.
Right. So in this particular instance, you had an artery failure, right? Just to bring it, right?
Yeah.
Not your fault for whatever reason, but your fucking problem. So how do you take what you're explaining to me, which is enough to send anybody just to quit life, to inspire you to, like, what does that mean to you now being where you are? Like, what's the meaning? Is it?
Man, I consider myself a very standard, simple person. I'm not particularly athletic. I'm not like anything different than the average human being. If you would have told me prior to this experience that I would be able to tackle it the way it did, I would have been like, well, no way. It is amazing how resilient the human mind and the human body is. I basically held on to the fact that I could see minor improvements every day. So when I woke up that one day unable to speak and to communicate, on top of that, mind you, when I came out of the surgery, I was getting full-on stroke symptoms. So I would lose sudden use of the left side of my body. Not just that, the worst, I think, is I couldn't understand music anymore. As a musician, as someone in pain, music is a big source of solace for many of us. When we're sad, we're happy, we listen to music. I couldn't just understand people. I couldn't understand music. I couldn't hear melody anymore. And it was a very isolating experience to, watch TV and just be like, what the fuck is going on? I don't know. I don't even recognize the theme song anymore.
Nothing. How long was this period? Because I know you said the surgery was in January of 16. How long were these, were these ancillary symptoms happening?
So that's the thing I think is really amazing. In about 2 months, I think I was at 90% back to normal. I would have slight hiccups when I was talking, which, to be honest, now I don't know if they're brain farts or from brain surgery, but that moment where you're like, what's that word again that I'm trying to find? That
would happen every day.
I know. So at this point, it's imperceptible. I don't know what it's from, if it's just me, but when I was recovering and it was getting better, there would be a lot of moments where I can't find a word, and the harder I searched, I couldn't find it. But it would happen a lot more often, and then I would see it shrink. So every day I would see minor improvements with my language, with my ability to understand other people. I didn't have to go through any therapy or anything like that. I didn't have to relearn music. I didn't have to relearn speech. My brain just slowly healed itself until I was able to sort of access whatever part of my brain that was kind of holding on to all those special parts, I guess, to in a way, most unscientific way, but yeah.
No, it's beautiful the way you're explaining. It's hard for me to kind of listen to thinking of the amount of resilience and it takes to get through that. And so clearly, like you said, the surgeries were a success. You're clearly a huge success in becoming, you know, I think obviously these are the very nascent years of what's to come, of the success of your life. But what does success mean to you? Like, did you think failure has anything to do with success? What is success now? That surgery was successful, let's say, as you, in your words, the two surgeries. But after experiencing that, did that alter the way that you see the world, the way you see success or value things or failure? Like, how did that alter your landscape?
When you have to face your own mortality, your perception on your life and your entire world changes dramatically. You know, when you're living like tomorrow's guaranteed, there's not as much stake in what's happening today. Versus now, my whole thing is, if I were to die tomorrow, which is it's plausible for anyone. plausible for anyone. Would I be happy with what I did today? And so for me, success is being able to live every day like it was my last, and to know that I will leave an impact on this world. Before, you know, I was making music and I was starting to get pulled into a lot of different directions. I feel like with more success, there's more people in your ear trying to tell you, oh, well, you know, you might want to consider doing this or that, this or that. Once I went through this surgery and I went through this entire process, I decided I'm making art and my music for myself. And what I'm going to do is create as honestly as possible and hope that it resonates with other people. Instead of making music to satisfy other people's happiness, I'm making music that satisfies myself. And if you listen to a song of mine and it touches you in some kind of way, there's some unspoken bond that we already have, because there's so much love and earnestness that comes behind the creation of all these songs. So I basically, if you want to turn into the real like optimistic, amazing part of this process, that this part made a really big impact on me. After this album, when I was able to make music again, I was just so grateful to be able to create that I decided I'm going to make an album just for me. And, you know, I hope people like it, but if they don't, I need to know that I made this album for me. And I made this album that I was really proud of, and it got recognized by all my peers. It got nominated for Best Electronic Album that following Grammys. And, you know, I was like, first female producer nominated in the category, first, you know, a person of color, first Asian American, all these things. All of that came from this hardship. So if I'm happy with where I am today, all those things had to have happened. And even though they sucked, I wouldn't change a single part of my life, because I'm really happy with my success and where I am and what I went through. And no one should have to go through that. But I know those were a difficult, necessary part of the process for me to be here.
And so do you think that if you zoom out for a second, do you think that that's a universal truth, that whatever hardship, struggle that a person experiences in their life, there is, whether it being cliched, like a silver lining, or, you know, that there is a reason towards that? Like, do you believe in purpose, that you go through that failure and failure leads to success? But what's the relationship between, like, use the word struggle, failure, whatever word you want to use, into that next enlightenment period? Do you think they go hand in hand, or do they not to need to coexist?
Yeah, it is, I think, a balance, right? I mean, as they say, you know, without the lows, you can't feel the highs. And as a musician, this will sound even more funny, but, you know, life is kind of like an oscillation. You know, it goes up and it goes down, it goes up.
Frequency.
And it's so interesting that I just like this concept never clicked with me before, but every time something bad has ever happened in my life that can be perceived as bad, something really good has happened. If there you've had like a really, really shitty breakup with a guy that you're in love with or a woman or whoever, but then, you know, at some point you met someone way more amazing, then you wouldn't have met them or appreciated them without going through that really shitty, you know, awful person, you know? And I just really believe that to be true, not to say that like struggle or failure is so hard on you that why would you submit and allow yourself to want to be okay with that? You know, we avoid pain. We're human beings, it's homeostasis. We don't want to hurt. We don't want to feel uncomfortable, but change in that process and the failure and the failures are embedded in failure. So many lessons too, you know, without the failures, like, how would you exist? And I know that many ways along my path, I've failed perceptibly in many ways, but it was cool because I like really like my life. I like where I am right now.
Always like that? Like, were you like this before this major event, or did this major event alter that landscape? Because the way that you're talking right now is, first of all, it's stunningly beautiful. I happen to agree with you in my own life completely. But was it all the same?
No.
Or did it take that something crazy like that to alter your philosophy effectively on life?
100%. It was, you know, these near-death experiences are it's like the universe is like shaking you awake. Like, hey, you know, there's more to life than what you're doing, you know, and it can be taken away in an instant. And the one thing is, you know, when people go through these experiences where they have almost died, they can end up in two ways. You can be liberated by it, knowing that life is really fragile, but some people can also live further in fear. You know, you are so close to dying, maybe it makes you more fearful of being sort of that close to death again. But for me, I just had this big lesson, like life is meaningful and meaningless, right? It's so meaningful in that, well, it's so meaningless in that we only have this one life. What does it really mean? We're insignificant in the whole scale of time and space, but so meaningful because we have this one moment to make an impression before we're back into stardust or, you know, reincarnated or heaven or whatever you want to believe. But this one life across all belief systems is the one, right? It's the one life that we have before of this version of yourself. And it's really precious. And, you know, why sweat the small stuff? You know, tomorrow's another day and it's so nice to be around.
You know, I'll ask you, this is, you know, I'm really, really, really touched by a lot of things that you're saying. And I'm sure the people that are listening will feel the same way in their own struggles. There's a question that I like to ask everyone that's on the show. And it really comes from, like you said, something that I kind of wanted to know myself, you know, speaking to, you know, what I believe to be some of the most interesting and successful people in the world that we've had on the show. And the question is actually really simple. It's, if there was one thing that you wish everybody in the world knew, what would that be?
Oh, man. I think that there's always a light at the end of the tunnel, and it's really hard to see when you're in that dark place, but that's what helped me get out of it. It's just that little glimmer of seeing that, okay, there's a tiny bit of hope, and just holding on to it, that light will get so much larger. And no matter how difficult your situation is or how hard or dark, if you can hold on to that little tiny pin light of light at that far spectrum, as far away as possible, if you can see it, there is hope and you'll make it out. Cause like, honestly, I don't know how I got here, but that's probably the only reason that I could attribute to is really holding on to making it and knowing that it can be done, you know?
That's super beautiful. And I think I agree with you. I wish everybody in the world knew that too. Certainly the things that, you know, I've looked at in my life that were the most dismal, And the way you explain like those micro improvements, like after your surgery, like giving you that faith to keep going. I think we all can learn from that. I know you're a very, very busy woman doing stuff. Thank you so much for spending some time with us, and look forward to spending more time together. Absolutely.
Yeah, 100%. I would love to talk more, and thanks for having me. I really appreciated it.
Thank you so much. Have a great day. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Bye. Thank you for listening. To access the full scope of lessons, pre-order your own personal copy of the book, The Gift of Failure, currently available on Amazon and other platforms to come. Until next time, fail on, my friends.